Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing on with chapter 6 of the second part of Brihadbhagavatamrita, and we just finished discussing some pastimes at home with Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, and then Krishna taking the cows to the fields. Now, the next section is dealing with some philosophical considerations in regard to these pastimes. And there are three parts to that. One is a brief discussion about the bliss of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Then there's a discussion about the incarnations of the Lord's associates, how the Lord's associates incarnate. That's an interesting subject. And then there is another brief discussion about the extraordinary love that the inhabitants of Goloka Vrindavan have for Krishna, particularly the gopis. So there are three elements or little subsections here in this section, which is dealing with some important philosophical considerations regarding these pastimes. So the first part is about the bliss of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, of Goloka Vrindavan, the eternal associates of the Lord. And just a brief discussion is there about how, even though Nandishvara, Nandagram, the main town where the palace of Nanda Maharaj is, even though that is extraordinarily opulent and even far more opulent than Dwaraka, what to speak of Ayodhya and what to speak of Vaikuntha? Far more opulent. And in that way, in a certain sense, attractive. But the people, the devotees, are not attracted to it. They are attracted to the fields and the forests. Yes, you may recall that in Dwaraka, after a little while, some of the well-meaning devotees approached Gopakumar and said, "Look, you look too kind of crude, ethnic, rustic. You should get some good city clothes." So they're in a city mood. And there's some influence, spiritual influence of spiritual opulence. But in Goloka Vrindavan, the devotees are not interested really in Nandishvara, even though it is far more opulent than even Dwaraka. They're attracted to the forests and fields. Why is that? Because that is where Krishna's favorite pastimes take place. That is where Krishna gets his most pleasure. And they are just attached to that. Therefore, they're more attached to the forests and the fields. That's one part of it. It's just a brief discussion. The other part is that some very intelligent people say that the bliss of Vaikuntha is considerably higher than the bliss of impersonal liberation. Others say that the bliss of Ayodhya is higher than that. And we can understand that's true because, of course, in both Vaikuntha and Ayodhya. Ayodhya, after all, is part of Vaikuntha. So servitude, dasyaras, is the predominant mellow. But in Ayodhya, It is more fixed. The devotees are more fixed in their dasya ras than they are in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, there's also the influence of some neutrality, passiveness, just appreciating the greatness of the Lord. Although actually dasya ras is generally pervading, but in Ayodhya, it is much more strongly pervading, the dasya ras. So therefore, there is an increase in the sweetness, or at least there is some sweetness. In Vaikuntha, there's not really sweetness. What is that sweetness? Where does it come from? It comes from the fact that Krishna, even though he is so great, but he is so pleasant and nice and personal. That's the influence of Yoga Maya. So actually Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that in Vaikuntha there is no Yoga Maya, in the sense of that spiritually deluding energy which makes one forget that Krishna is God, forget that he is so great and so powerful and so grand. So in Vaikuntha there is no Yoga Maya, so there is not really sweetness so much. But everyone is very impressed and in a very formal, reverential mood. They're worshipping the Lord. But in Ayodhya, there is some sweetness. And we gave an example of that. Do you remember the example we gave? Yes, that's it. Lord Ram embraced Hanuman. This is an act of sweetness. This is not an act of greatness and power and magnificence. This is an act of affection. Very personal. So in Ayodhya, the devotees are more fixed in servitude, and on a higher level, at least the higher level is manifest sometimes, so there are elements of sweetness. And in Dwarka, those people who understand, they say that in Dwarka there's even more pleasure, because friendship and even some vatsalya ras and even smaller amounts but some conjugal rasa. So sweetness is definitely considerably more prominent in Dwarka. But they say that the bliss of Goloka Vrindavan is higher still. It transcends reason. Therefore, it cannot be expressed in words. And Sarup says, Gopakumar is now Sarup, don't forget that. He says, only those who live there can understand it. So it looks like we'll have to go there. That's the end of the message. I mean, Maharaj Parikshit tells his mother, so you're going to have to go there. Do whatever you can, but just go there somehow. Yes, so that bliss in Goloka Vrindavan is higher than the bliss in Dwarka. So high it transcends reason and any attempt to describe it with words, and only those who live there can understand it. And even they can't really understand it, but at least they can understand it better than anyone else. So then the next part of the discussion, philosophical discussion, is about how the eternal associates of the Lord incarnate. This is interesting. Now, of course, we know already that the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnates, and that Srimati Radharani goes with him and incarnates in suitable forms, in so many suitable forms. But also, the eternal associates in Vaikuntha. They are the main eternal associates, are incarnations of the Goloka Vrindavan devotees. The example is given of Subal. In Vaikuntha, he is Garuda. Yes. Subal. He's a cowherd boy, very intimate cowherd boyfriend of Krishna in Vrindavan. But just like Srimati Radharani, who wants to be with her Lord, wherever he goes, whatever he does, so Subal also, and various others. They do that, and they can do that. So Subal becomes Garuda in Vaikuntha. Then Lord Vishnu is there amongst the demigods. So the eternal associates incarnate amongst the demigods also. So Subal amongst the demigods becomes Garuda again. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Sridham. I'm sorry. Forgive me. It's not Subal, actually. It's Sridharma. So, when they appear in Vaikuntha, they're called reflections, Pratibimba. When they appear amongst the demigods, they're called shadows, Pratichaya. Chaya, of course, means shadow. Dehe mora pada chaya. Give us the shade of your lotus feet. We sing every day. So, chaya means shadow, Pratichaya. And the senses, of course, it's quite easy to understand, that when you look in the mirror, that's your reflection. And even though the shadow is sort of the same thing, but it's not as precise as the mirror image. And the mirror image, of course, you know, is very convincing, but it's not really the same as the actual person. So the example is given, an example is given of Nanda Maharaj, that he appears amongst the demigods as one of the Vasus called Drona. You may have heard this. Yes, this is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Nanda Maharaj was an incarnation of Drona. This is not obviously Dronacharya, but he's a demigod, particular demigod, one of the Vasus. So, how does it work? So the way it works is that, just as when Krishna comes in his original form, we discussed some days ago how all the other forms come, and they amalgamate in Krishna. So when Krishna comes to this planet and the original associate comes from Goloka, then the expanded forms of the associate merge into the original form who is now appearing on earth with the original Krishna. So then, you know, this idea of how is Nanda, Drona, and what is the relationship? That is explained. That when it comes time for Krishna to appear in his original form, so Nanda Maharaj will also appear in his original form. So then, doesn't mention, does it? No. Who he is in Vaikuntha, but anyway, amongst the demigods, he's Drona. He's somebody also in Vaikuntha. But anyway, when it comes time for the original Krishna to descend, and the original Nanda is coming with him. Then there is some special arrangement made for Drona to get a special blessing from Lord Brahma, that he can become a perfect devotee. So this happened. This Drona, he got a benediction from Lord Brahma, and it was arranged to happen like this, that he could become perfect. Then, on the strength of that blessing, that Drona merged with the original Nanda when the original Nanda appeared, and thus got the opportunity to join in the pastimes of Krishna. And Sanatana Goswami says, this also reconciles the question, or the account at least, accounts we hear of Radharani, of different things happening to Radharani in different Puranas, and you know, as a result of these different things, she ended up here. Yeah. Of course, when the original Krishna comes, the original Radharani most certainly comes, and that is that. Yes. Her coming is not dependent on anything else. But where there may be some expansions of Radharani, who would then merge into the original Radharani, then there's some special arrangement made, some special pastime. Just like Drona, he gets a special blessing. So there could be a special anything, a special curse, just some special arrangement, whatever it is. And then the expanded person merges with the original Radharani. Yeah. So this is there with these avatars of the, and they're called avatars, the avatars of the eternal associates. Mother Rati Manjari. They expand. See, it depends who they are, but in many cases, well, there are four main levels of expansion or existence. First is with the original, then Vaikuntha, then amongst the demigods, then amongst the humans. In the case of the very advanced, prominent eternal associates, they always appear wherever the Lord appears. Yes, they'll always appear. What was your question, though? Sorry.
But, when you explain how they merge again with the original,
yeah.
I'm just wondering, is that only within a particular universe that Krishna's appearing
at the time? Yeah, they merge. You know, we heard that when Krishna appears, sometimes Vaikuntha becomes vacant. You cannot find certain persons. And Narada said he just leaves us alone. So therefore we can take it from that some of these other personalities would be missing also because they merged. Yeah. Anyway, don't ask a question like that. But this is the principle. This is how it's working somehow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it says here, this explanation also reconciles the account in Padma Purana's Kartik Mahatmya of Sri Radha's previous life and her incarnation on the earth. We can understand that she was attracted to descend from Goloka for the service of her worshipable Lord, who is more attractive than millions of Cupids, and she therefore found some pretext to bring her partial expansion with her to take birth in Vrajabhumi. Okay, then just a little brief description about the extraordinary love of the inhabitants of Goloka Vrindavan, and particularly the gopis, for Krishna. So, Sarup explains that in Goloka, everyone is convinced that they are the most dear to Krishna. Yes, Krishna loves me more than anyone else. You might think this could give rise to pride. It doesn't. Because still, even though they're feeling like that, their desire to please Krishna is so strong that they never feel satisfied. And that dissatisfaction, along with separation, occasional separation, gives birth to their humility. You remember that? That on the level of prema, separation is the mother of their humility. So they are just incredibly humble. But that is a mood which arises when they're in separation as a factor or part or result of being separated from Krishna. And it grows stronger and stronger. Particularly though, it is obvious that Krishna loves the gopis more than anyone else. And Sarup says there are three things which Krishna does which display his extra love for the gopis. One is just an emotional display, feeling, preeti, feelings, emotions of affection, preeti, or emotions of love. Second is kripa, that he gives them more mercy, which is the manifest form of that love, beyond just emotion. And asakti, his attachment, or very tangible terms, his dedication to them, his willingness to do anything for them, his showing special favor to them. So therefore, Sarup makes the point that, therefore, it can be seen that Krishna loves them more than anyone else, and that they love him more. But still, amongst the gopis, none of them think that they love him. In fact, they're thinking, when will I become the lowest maidservant of Krishna? When will that day come? And Sarup says, the exalted nature of this fathomless deep love is so profound, it cannot be understood even by the greatest sages. So that's a bit of philosophy for today. Most of what follows is rather devastating stories. Two in particular. There are three, but there's two in particular. First is, well, actually, these stories are not just stories, of course. They are demonstrations of the philosophy. They're going to demonstrate about the love. In that way, they're going to show the how special the place is and how special the inhabitants of the place are. And in this way, Goloka is going to be established. And the inhabitants of Goloka are going to be established as the greatest. So the first is the Kaliya Leela. There are two pastimes in which separation reaches, you know, unimaginable, sort of death-defying proportions. One is the Kaliya Leela, and one is the Leela of Krishna leaving Vrindavan. So to illustrate the fact that the inhabitants of Goloka love Krishna more than anyone else loves Krishna, and therefore their place is the greatest of all the places. So now Sarup is going to tell us these two stories with some vivid detail. Yes. So one day Krishna heard that Kaliya was there in the lake and was poisoning everything, and it was very bad. So he climbed one kadamba tree, dived in with a mighty splash, which sent the water out of the lake around all the sides, the distance of 100 bow lengths. We are not so much familiar with using bows, but I guess they're a couple of meters long or something like that. So it means for a couple of 100 meters all the way round, there were these waves. The water just got thrown out, as, you know, when something makes a big splash, water gets thrown to the sides. So this happened. Krishna, first of all, just enjoyed splashing around. He just splashed around. But then out of curiosity, he went over to Kaliya just to see what his coils were like, and he allowed himself to be grabbed by Kaliya. So his friends saw this, the cowherd boys, and that apparently Krishna was not exhibiting signs of life, and they became totally overwhelmed. It has been mentioned already that previously, just when they were walking through the forest and he would walk behind one tree, you know, just if we're walking through the car park, you walk behind a tree, so someone who's on the other side will not see you for 2 seconds or something like that. So Krishna would also walk behind a tree, not hide, but just pass behind the tree. And the cowherd boys, they were not watching anything other than Krishna. He would go behind the tree, they wouldn't see him for, you know, like that long. But they would almost die. You can see they're very advanced. They're much more advanced than us. It's just another dimension, way different from us. So they became overwhelmed. Then suddenly, all the animals came. All the cows, bulls, calves, and all the forest animals. Somehow they all came crying terribly, their eyes fixed on Krishna. The birds came, they were flying over the lake until they became exhausted and they just fell into the lake. And all the vegetation dried up. Inauspicious omens appeared. Then it's described, Krishna inspired one old man who happened to be in the area. He inspired him through the heart to go running back into the village and tell everyone. So this old man came running back crying, "Alas, alas, great disaster." Now there are already inauspicious omens. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan had already assumed that something was wrong with Krishna. So they were already running around here and there. And then this man came and told them that Krishna had been caught by Kaliya. So Lord Balaram, he understood that it wasn't really that serious. Krishna's just having a pastime. But he didn't want to tell the inhabitants of Vrindavan, just don't worry, it's okay. Out of respect for them, he didn't want to interrupt their mood of ecstasy and separation. But initially, Lord Balaram, as the inhabitants of Vrindavan started running towards the Yamuna, Lord Balaram ran in front of them and said, "It's a lie. It's a lie." But no one listened to him. The only one who listened to him was Rohini. Well, first of all, do you know how come Balaram was there? Yes, it was his birthday. This pastime takes place on the appearance day of Lord Balaram. So therefore he was at home having a birthday party with his mother. So she was the only one he could stop. There's some special connection between the two of them, of course. So she stayed home to prepare lunch, and everyone else became like running corpses. So, arriving at the lake, Lord Balaram saw Krishna and somehow became influenced by Yogamaya himself and forgot that it was just a pastime and that it was okay. And he also broke down in the distress of love and he lamented. Balaram lamented in such ways that it would shatter logs and stones. Yes. And for a moment he fainted, as Nanda and Yashoda had already done. Then all the living beings let out an overwhelming, frightful roar, making the entire universe cry in pain in response. And this woke up Lord Balaram. So again, he came to his senses and steadied himself to see what he could do to help. And he saw that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're running into the river to join Krishna, or maybe to try to save him, or to be with him at least. But it's very dangerous. So Lord Balaram was stopping them. Sometimes he was shouting out to stop them. Sometimes he was glancing at them to stop them. Sometimes he was physically stopping them. But then they were more and more, going in more and more quickly. Eventually Balaram came to the point he couldn't run back and forth and stop them. And they were all just going to go in and die. So Lord Balaram became overwhelmed, seeing everyone as if living dead. So he called out to Krishna. "Oh, Krishna, Krishna, these are not your associates who live in Vaikuntha. They're not the forest monkeys, nor the Yadavas. These are your devotees of Goloka, whose only life is you. They're dying, my Lord, and there's nothing I can do to save them. Before these devotees give up their life ears, please abandon this pastime, O most merciful one. Otherwise, dear Krishna, only friend of the cowherds, whose nature is so gentle, your heart will become filled with grief. Even though they have eternal spiritual bodies, Lord Balaram feels they're going to die." So The gopis were crying and fainting, the limbs of their bodies in terrible pain, their hearts shattered by sorrow. They began to enter the lake to be with Krishna. They had arrived later because they were fainting more as they were coming. Therefore, they arrived later. So they just arrived now, actually. Yes, took them longer to get there due to fainting more. So anyway, they started entering the lake. But then Krishna suddenly released himself from the grip of Kaliya, jumped up on his Kaliya's thousand hoods, called the gopis. They had a huge rasa dance and completely smashed Kaliya's heads. Wow. Until he was just totally devastated. Nanda Maharaj and the others were too slow to recover from their shock to see this, so they missed it. And the next thing they saw was when Krishna was getting back off on the land, off the heads of Kaliya, when Kaliya had surrendered. Yes. So Krishna took the shawls of the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, made a rope from it, put it through the noses of Kaliya with his left hand, and then rode on Kaliya like a horse while playing his flute with his right hand. From time to time he goaded him with his flute, and in this way showed Kaliya great mercy. So then Krishna came out and got down from Kaliya, who was now very happy. He exiled Kaliya and was reunited with the devotees. So in this pastime, there's more, I mean, there's detail like in the Bhagavatam about the devastation of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It's described there. Sanatana Goswami describes in his purports and other of the acharyas how they were fainting, bang, and then getting up and fainting, bang. And it's described that it was just like if there's a lightning storm, a dead tree may be struck and stand up and just fall down. So like that, they would just stand up and fall down. And anyway, very, very devastating. Even though they had spiritual bodies, it seemed like they would die. So then, a few days later, Keshi and Aristasura came together. Yes, they came simultaneously. Keshi is the horse, Aristasura is a bull. So first of all, Krishna kicked Keshi away. Then he grabbed the bull, tied him up, and took him to Gopeshwar Shiva is in town. Because Gopeshwar Shiva does not have Nandi with him. If you've ever looked there, he is one form of Lord Shiva who does not have Nandi. So he got Arishtasura, has become his Nandi. The horse came back, but Krishna tamed him and rode him and taught him a number of clever movements, all different tricks, horse tricks. So Krishna kept Keshi so that his friends could have horse rides, and he kept Arishtasura so he could be Nandi for Gopeshwar Shiva, and also for pulling carts sometimes when the devotees wanted to go on joy rides. Yes. Then finally, Krishna leaves Vrindavan. This is a very amazing description. There are, let me just tell you some of the little sections. First of all, Akrura arrives in Vrindavan and convinces Nanda Maharaj to let him take Krishna to Mathura. Then the gopis become distressed. Then Akrura appeals to everyone to allow Krishna to go. But the gopis curse him, or strongly rebuke him, put it that way. Then the gopis appeal to Krishna personally not to go. And then there is the terrible scene when Krishna finally leaves Vrindavan. Then Krishna has pastimes in Mathura, and Nanda Maharaj returns to Vrindavan without Krishna. And then, there's a special bit, we'll tell you about that when we get to it. This is in Goloka. So, Sanatana Goswami says that at the time that Krishna left Vrindavan, if even stones, logs, and other inert objects from other places, not Brijbasi stones or Brijbasi trees or other, you know, like hills, like not Govardhan Hill, but stones and logs and other inert, inanimate objects from other places, anywhere. Maybe in Russia. Yes. Or, you know, wherever it might be, France, or even South Africa. If even stones, logs, and other inert objects from other places hear what happened in Vraja at that time, they would begin crying and shatter into pieces. Yes. So one day Akrura came on Kamsa's order to take Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. He came in the afternoon and stayed overnight, wanting to leave and take them in the morning. So all night the Brijbasis simply cried and fainted. Mother Yashoda kept hiding Krishna behind her clothes and constantly muttering different mantras and incantations to protect him. In the morning, Akrura convinced Nanda Maharaj. So Nanda Maharaj ordered his sobbing wife, Yashoda, "You bring him outside. Bring Krishna out." So this virtually shattered the lives of the gopis, who were watching and just shamelessly crying, "Alas, alas," in agonized tones. So Mother Yashoda came out, wiping the tears from her eyes, and handed Krishna to Akrura and told Nanda Maharaj he must be returned no matter what anyone says. After this, Mother Yashoda returned to her house, losing consciousness every few steps. Then a great cry came from the women of Vraja. Sanatan Goswami says, remembering this scene when Krishna was handed over and Mother Yashoda went back to the house, remembering the scene until today, even stones cry, trees shed watery tears, and lightning bolts fall apart. The whole universe becomes submerged in an ocean of misery, with the exception of those souls who immediately give up their lives. So Mother Yashoda tried to console the gopis. This is now the distress of the gopis increasing. Mother Yashoda tried to console the gopis that he, Akrura, is a saintly person. His father is a sage, Swapalka. So there's no need to worry. But the gopis, the young gopis, turn to Yashoda and tell her, oh, merciless woman, oh, fool, after offering your own child into the hands of a tiger, how can you enter your house, which deserves to be burnt down? So they criticized her and Nanda Maharaj severely. That is just one little sample. But they severely criticized Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and cursed Akrura in a wild frenzy. Then they ran out of their houses to Krishna, crying out to Krishna. Sanatan Goswami says, these manifold displays of extreme sorrow, insufferable pain and crying made everyone also cry, even Akrura and Nanda, Balaram and the cowherds, and even beloved Krishna sitting on the chariot. All the residents of Vraja became totally bewildered. So then Krishna came back to his senses, saw the gopis on the verge of dying, came down from the chariot and went with them into the forest. So now Akrura appeals for Krishna to go, and the gopis strongly rebuke him. So when Akrura came to his senses, he saw that Krishna was no longer on the chariot. So he made a plan. Let me win the confidence of Balaram. He's the older brother, and he will convince Krishna or influence him to come with me. So he told Lord Balaram very vividly about how Vasudev and Devaki were suffering in Kamsa's prison, which is true. It was a very horrific situation. Then Balaram followed Krishna's footprints and found him with the gopis in a grove. Balaram didn't want to go forward. He felt embarrassed. He doesn't enter into those pastimes. But Akrura just came running forward. And he told Krishna that Kamsa is already holding up his sword to kill your parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. It's not right for you to neglect your devotees in this way. They're so terrified and they're feeling so much separation from you. And they feel pained when he blasphemes you. So it's not right for you to abandon them like this. He says that the Yadavas, they're your pure devotees, they have no shelter other than you. They're depending on me to bring you. They're burning in a fire of lamentation. It would be wrong to frustrate them. Then Akrura took a blade of grass, or took blades of grass between his teeth, and bowed down at the lotus feet of the gopis one by one, and appealed to them, "Dear goddesses, have mercy on them. Please help Krishna's poor, aged parents who are imprisoned by Kamsa. Don't cause the death of all the Yadus and of the whole world." Sounds quite convincing. It's a good appeal. It's a very strong appeal. To protect the devotees in their great, great time of need. And for Krishna to protect his own parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, when they're in such danger. So the gopis responded, Oh, thief, liar, follower of Kamsa, who are the parents of he who is the son of Nanda and Yashoda?" So they don't accept this. Vasudeva and Devaki are Krishna's parents. They're not Krishna's parents. Who are these people who are the parents of the son of Nanda and Yashoda? "Don't kill Gokula village," Akrura said. "Don't kill the Yadus." They say, "Don't kill Gokula village." And Akrura said, "Don't kill the world." The gopi said, "Don't kill women." So they're saying that Vasudev, Devaki, the Yadus, they've been in the hands of Kamsa for years, but they're still alive. But if Krishna leaves, then there's no doubt that we women and everyone here, there's no doubt we'll die. If Krishna doesn't go, they may not die. Vasudeva and Devaki, they haven't died yet. They may not die, but we will die. We'll definitely die. You thief, you liar, telling us that Krishna has parents other than Vasudeva and Devaki, other than Nanda and Yashoda. Liar. So, but when Krishna heard Akrura speak about the sufferings of his devotees in Mathura, he became compassionate. He apologized to the gopis in a mood of mixed sadness and anger. And he saw that Balaram agreed with Akrura. So Akrura, seeing it was his chance, ran to the chariot to get it ready. So the gopis saw Krishna about to leave. They threw themselves at his feet. And they told him, "Oh, Master," they were afraid of the impending fire of separation. Not of how they are feeling now, but of the impending fire of separation. "Oh, Master, because we have no shelter, we cannot live for even a fraction of a second without you. Please don't abandon us, your maidservants. O Lord, just take us along wherever you go. On account of you, the forest is our home, and our homes became like the forest. Our enemies became friends, and our friends became enemies. Poison became like sweet nectar, and nectar became poison. Without you, we will die. Somehow we survive during the day, hoping that you'll return in the evening. But if you stay away for a long time in Mathura, then how will we live? Always being in anxiety for your well-being. So how will we live? And we don't know how difficult will it be for you to kill Kamsa and to save the devotees. And we don't even know if you'll remember us there. So they spoke with such pitiful laments that everyone there also cried and became bewildered. Somehow, Krishna steadied himself. Washing the tears from his eyes and the eyes of the gopis, he spoke in a choked voice that this Kamsa, this impotent Kamsa, he won't be very difficult to deal with. You should just consider that I've practically come back already. And don't lament, you'll make everything inauspicious. So then finally, the terrible scene, if that wasn't terrible enough, the terrible scene when Krishna finally leaves Vrindavan. So everyone, including all the animals of Vrajmandala, all gathered there, and Akrura prepared the chariot. With great difficulty, Krishna withdrew his eyes from the gopis. Mother Yashoda then saw the distress of the gopis, overcome with ecstasy and fainting and falling to the ground and becoming covered with dust. She also cried. Nanda Maharaj tried to pacify everyone, although he was devastated himself. He told everyone in a very sort of, you know, he's trying to be very cool and calm and just make it seem like it's not such a big thing, although he can't really do that. He says, please don't think that I'm happy going to Mathura, because he's also going. And don't think that I believe that Krishna is someone else's son. Don't have any doubt. I'll bring Krishna back shortly, despite what anyone may try to do to stop me. I'll bring Krishna back. It's all right. So Mother Yashoda, who has great trust in Nanda Maharaj, she became a little pacified and tried to console the gopis, sprinkling water on them and doing various things to bring them back to consciousness. Then Akrura started the chariot. Sanatan Goswami says, the gopis could not tolerate being separated from Krishna at all. As they watched him depart, cries of alas, alas were heard. The ladies' faces dried up, their steps faltered, and they sobbed pitifully in great pain, in long drawn-out tones, with their voices choking in their throats. They ran behind the chariot, their cries filling all the directions. Some of them took hold of the chariot. Some fell down with force beneath its wheels. Some fainted and others could not move. The cows, bulls, calves, deer, and other animals stood around the chariot, bellowing, their faces drenched with tears. Even wolves and jackals approached the chariot to join the chorus of lamenting animals. Birds wandered in the sky above Krishna, making a disturbed noise of confusion. The leaves of all the plants suddenly dried up. Stones and trees fell from the mountains like Govardhan Hill. The rivers dried up, leaving the fish and vegetation stranded. And then they turned to flow upstream. Seeing the devastation of his devotees, Krishna became overwhelmed with pain and sorrow. He couldn't stop their wild crying, being too busy trying to control his own. Akrura became afraid that Krishna was going to jump off again and run. So he acted as if he was trying to hold Krishna so that he wouldn't faint and fall off, but actually was trying to hold him so he wouldn't escape. And then he drove away, carefully dodging the ladies and others, like an eagle cruelly taking a piece of flesh away. And soon could not be seen. So, Sarup tells Janas Sharma, the Brahmin, how the Brijbasis suffered is too painful to hear. It shatters thunderbolts to pieces. And Sarup says, I've said enough about this. And then he faints. Of course, we understand that Krishna went from Nandagram, and the scene that we have just described in a matter of 2 or 3 or 5 minutes did not just take 2 or 3 or 5 minutes. But when Akrura started, the gopis and the animals and everyone trying to stop the chariot and stop Akrura and stop Krishna, that went on from Nandagram most of the way down to Govardhan Hill. Many kilometers, this battle was going on between particularly the gopis and all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan and Akrura and the chariot. And in fact, from Nandagram, you come down to Unchagaon, Varshana, then down, and you reach Govardhan. There are different little villages along the way. And some of those villages are named after some of the incidents which took place as the inhabitants of Vrindavan were trying to stop the chariot. You know, we're talking about like 30 or 40 kilometers probably, this battle was going on to somehow stop Akrura, stop Krishna, stop the chariot. So, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys and the cowherd men, they got on their carts because they were all going, and they went. Sarup fainted, saying that he could not say any more. But then he came back to consciousness and decided that he should tell at least a little more. So he said, Krishna went to Mathura, killed Kamsa, delivered Vasudeva and Devaki and the Yadus, pleased everyone, made Ugrasen the king, brought all the Yadus who'd run away into hiding, brought them all back into Mathura, was very happy. Then seeing them who were happy now, having suffered for many years because of him, he felt compassionate and decided he wanted to stay. So therefore he told Nanda Maharaj that if at least you don't go, if you don't go, they'll surely die. If I don't go, they may die. But if both you and I don't go, they'll surely die. So at least you go. somehow he convinced Nanda Maharaj. And he told Nanda Maharaj, I'll be back soon, don't worry. Nanda Maharaj said, I'll never believe that you are someone else's son. This is on his mind. I'll never believe this, that you're someone else's son. And I'll never believe that you'll go and live somewhere else. And when you say, I will return, I believe you. But then he breaks down. Save us. Save us. Don't leave us. Don't leave us. Go wherever you like. We'll go with you. So then Nanda Maharaj it looked like he was convincing Krishna to go back. So Vasudev, who is a great diplomat, in fact, he is a Kshatriya, but he is the diplomatic Kshatriya, not so much the fighting Kshatriya. He's more the talking Kshatriya, negotiator. He came and said that, actually, there's no doubt that Krishna will be happiest in Vrindavan, but he should be given initiation and he should get some education. So let him stay here for a while, and who knows, Jarasandha might attack also. So Nanda Maharaj agrees and goes back. So there's a very emotional scene when Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys and cowherd men leave, and it looks like Krishna may go again, but Vasudev somehow keeps him back. Nanda Maharaj arrived back in Vrindavan village. Everyone was so happy because he had promised that undoubtedly he would come back with Krishna. But all he did, he didn't say anything. He just got off his chariot, walked into the house, and collapsed. And everyone was looking, where's Krishna? Until they realized, there's no Krishna. So Sanatana Goswami says, alas, 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 Krishna's mother and the other women cried in agony. Alas, 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 alas. How can I describe what they felt? So again, Sarup fainted, and the Brahman had to revive him. But then Sarup continued a little further, and then there is the last little bit in this section. Krishna returns to Vrindavan, because this is Goloka. On the advice of Uddhava, Krishna felt that he should return to Vrindavan, and he did. A little later. There's no way to save the people of Vrindavan from dying other than you're going back. So Krishna went back. In this way, he showed his compassion on those inhabitants of Vrindavan. And they completely forgot. After a while, they completely forgot that he had gone. Being reunited with him, so happy they forgot that he had ever left. If sometime someone, the idea would enter their mind that Krishna had left some time before, the person would think, oh no, no, no. I just had a nightmare, that's all. A very bad dream. But it never happened. Thus they couldn't remember anything or think of anything for the future like that he might go again. Then, after some time, Akrura came again and took Krishna. And again, everyone and everything became as before. And he killed Kamsa again and came back again. So Sarup explains, again and again he lifts Govardhan Hill, defeats Kaliya, and performs all his pastimes to attract the minds of the Brijbasis. Each time they think it is the first time. Being completely overwhelmed by the poison of their love for him. And this love simply increases more and more with each pastime. And Sarup says, even newcomers like me experience the same thing. And how is it possible that we would not forget being so overcome by our love for him? Then he says that, oh, the most amazing thing is that Krishna himself forgets. Under the influence of his love for the devotees and the devotees' love for him. So he also thinks it's the first time. So then finally, Sarup explains what has happened to him since then, since going back. He says that on Krishna's order, he remained there in Goloka for some time. But then Krishna asked him to come back to Gokula. And now he goes up and down. And now he doesn't know whether he is in one or the other. It makes no difference to him. But sometimes, when he's traveling, he sees some of the places in between. And he realizes, oh, I was in Gokula, now I'm going to Goloka. Or I was in Goloka, now I'm going to Gokula. In terms of the order of those places as he goes up and down. And then he realizes where he was and where he's now going. He says, sometimes I see the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. It looks like they're very miserable. I don't know what he would think if he saw us or people on this planet. It might look like they're dead. Yes. So he finishes. I offer my respectful obeisances to the people of Goloka, who eternally see the glories of that abode and who are worshipped by the residents of all the worlds. How can I describe them in words? So that is the end of the sixth chapter. Any comments or questions? Question is, you'd like us to draw some comparison, is it? Between the mood of separation of the gopis and the mood of Srila Prabhupada?
Yeah.
Or that he didn't show that? It said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Nabujaya. It's very hard to understand the thinking of the very great devotees. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he would sometimes exhibit symptoms of separation. As we mentioned before, some time ago, that generally the devotees, and we're talking about the devotees who are mixing with the junior devotees, they do their best to not exhibit their deep spiritual sentiments, but to present themselves externally in such ways that they set an excellent example for the junior devotees. So, you know, that's the mood of Srila Prabhupada. He's in the mood of Acharya, setting an example for us. Therefore, he acted like that in ways that we could watch him and then understand how we should act. So he was keeping those feelings, spiritual emotions, internal. Sometimes they would come out, though, because, you know, sometimes, despite, you know, their great efforts, the great devotees can't stop them from coming out. So sometimes with Srila Prabhupada, they would come out. But generally, he was acting as, you know, a very sober and very, you know, kind of well-organized devotee for our benefit, so we could follow his example in that regard. So therefore, you know, to try to draw some direct comparison between the way Prabhupada conducted himself in our midst and the way that the gopis conduct themselves in their pastimes, direct pastimes with Krishna, where, you know, there's no question of acting in a certain way to set an example for some neophytes. You know, it's kind of like a rasa-basa, I think, really. Yeah. But internally, Srila Prabhupada was certainly experiencing all those types of emotions. And like, for example, sometimes he would sing Jai Radha Madhava. There are a number of accounts. And he would just go into a trance. Means he would actually go into that pastime. Yeah. But other times, or on the whole, he was conducting himself as, you know, the head of a spiritual institution who is setting a good example for others to follow. Acharya, one who teaches by example. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, those are the basic elements which are there in terms of Srila Prabhupada and how he would act and the gopis and how they're acting. Srila Prabhupada, we don't know what his position is in Vrindavan Leela, although we assume, we don't know, I mean, in concrete terms, we assume he's in the conjugal rasa. So we assume his emotions and he himself, he is one of them. He's one of them, actually. Yes. So in that way, there's no difference, but it's actually, we've just been reading about some of things which he is involved in on in that sphere of his life. You know, also like the Goswamis, six Goswamis, they were very sober. Of course, sometimes they would run around, hey Radhe, Vraja Devike, Chalalite, looking for Krishna. But so much of the time, they were very sober scholars and, you know, preaching and leading all the devotees. But their gopis themselves in Vrindavan Leela. So therefore, you know, generally you won't find parallels, you know, obvious parallels like that when the devotees are acting as spiritual leaders in human society and when they're actually in the pastimes directly. Yeah. And that's, you know, as we explained the other day, it's a devotional principle. It's like a rule that when those people come and mix with the in this world and preach, then it is expected that they will conduct themselves as first-class regulated devotees externally. But internally, all those things are going on. Yeah, so it works like that. But, you know, having said that, you would see, you know, symptoms of Srila Prabhupada's advancement in the form of, for example, one of the first symptoms of someone on the level of bhava is that they never waste any time. So we saw that in the example of Srila Prabhupada. Even though it wasn't just, you know, wild emotional displays, but he never wasted a second. He would hardly sleep. And he was just constantly performing empowered devotional service. So that is an external manifestation of a very advanced condition. Extreme humility, extreme attachment to chanting the holy names, extreme taste for glorifying Krishna. These are all symptoms of being on that very elevated level, which we can observe on our level. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we'll go through the last chapter, seventh chapter, then I'll tell you, tomorrow I'll tell you what's going to happen for the rest of the course. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.